Hey guys, my name is Fain Mensah, head of the community, and welcome to season 2 of Cap Talk, the podcast that talks to the who's who in computer aerobiology. This season, David and I will cover various themes at the intersection of biology and technology, from hiring and team building to data strategies, and from bioprocessing to Internet of Things. We're really excited to welcome a new guest and gain some new insights. You can hail the cab at revolutionaries@computeraerobiology.com to tell us where to take you next. And to stay up to date, you can find all our great content on computeraerobiology.com. Enjoy the next episode and don't forget to like and subscribe.
Welcome to Cab Talk, the computer-aided biology podcast. My name is David Kirk, and I'm here with your co-host, head of computer-aided biology community, Fain Mensah. We are here with Tom Ag from Vivid Technology. He's a recruiter in digital health. We are very excited to talk about recruitment in computer-aided biology because it's such a diverse kind of skill set. There are so many different types of companies kind of recruiting as well, especially in the startup space. And there's always the big question, which is, what are you worth? And we're hopefully going to cover a little bit of all of that today. Remember, if you want to get involved in the computer-aided biology community, go to computeraidedbiology.com or drop us a line at revolutionaries@computeraidedbiology.com.
Awesome. That was a great intro, David.
We did okay.
Yeah, I did well. Tom, thank you so much for joining us today. For the people that are not really familiar with Vivid Technology, tell us a little bit more about your company, but also tell us a bit more about yourself, who you are, where you're from.
No problem. And thanks for having me on the podcast, guys. I'm really looking forward to the points that we'll cover today. So I work for a company called Vivid Technology, and we specialize in technology recruitment globally. And we focus in a few kind of emerging technology areas. So I head up a team focused on digital health, but we also cover satellite communications in space, industrial automation, as well as enterprise software. So more of the emerging technology industries on a global scale. So I've been recruiting, this is now my 8th year in recruitment.
Oh, wow.
I started, I'm not sure how I've done it, but it's going well. So I started in exec search within the pharma life science space. So I was recruiting for some of the top pharma companies in Europe as well as the US, and did that for a couple of years, and then transitioned to technology companies that are actually designing semiconductors. So started to see both how products were designed and then kind of taken through the manufacturing process from R&D and into manufacturing. About 2 years ago, I started to see an industry forming that could relate to my values as a person, which was digital health, because this industry, because of the emergence of new technologies, is really growing, and there's a lot of positive change that's coming from it. So I started to recruit for companies that are developing technology for uses within drug discovery, developing medical devices, developing software for use within clinical trials. So yeah, the industry that I recruit in is called digital health, but there's many different kind of subsidiaries of that, one of which is AI drug discovery, which is my main focus at the moment. There's a lot of technology companies that are looking at AI and machine learning algorithms.
It's a very hot topic right now.
Yeah.
It is, and there's obvious reasons for that, one of which is very current, as we're all living through. Another of which is typically it takes 15 years to design a drug and get it to market, and I think it costs around $2 billion, which when you have a lot of diseases and a lot of people struggling with health, that's too long and too expensive. And I think that's why this industry is really taking off, because we have the technology now to improve those stats. And so that's what I do. I help startups and small medium enterprises grow through hiring the right people at the right time, typically on the tech side of their business, but also on the commercial side. We recruit for companies in the UK in Cambridge, Oxford, and London, as well as companies in Silicon Valley and Boston, Cambridge, in the US. So there's a lot of companies, and they're all looking to hire, and they're all looking to grow. So it's a busy time, but it's a good place to recruit.
So how do these companies hire then? Because it sounds like there's a diverse area of kind of skill sets there. How do these companies hire, and how has, you mentioned what we're all living through without saying the word, I think that's very, very clever, but how has COVID changed this then, the hiring process?
It's changed a lot for how companies hire. To be honest, startups, they have a few different options about recruitment. They can recruit through their own network, they can use a specialist recruiter like myself, or they can set up their own internal recruitment function. The cost of those options varies depending on what a company needs to do and how it needs to scale. But typically, the companies that I recruit for need to attract candidates that have a very specific or niche skill set. So it does involve maybe outsourcing recruitment because of the time it takes to find people.
Yeah.
I guess before the pandemic, recruitment was a lot harder, to be honest, because people couldn't work from home. There was not as much flexibility with companies adjusting their strategy regarding flexible working hours. But COVID has had a big impact on recruitment. There's a couple of companies I recruit for in the US that have completely shut their offices now, right, and they don't have plans to reopen. They're going to meet up once a quarter for a team meeting, and then back to home.
So Tom, can you just, because I'm really curious on how the process goes, and can you just take me through, let's say I'm a CEO of a biotech company, and I've just been hit by COVID, I have to reshape my team, I have to recruit. What are the process that I'll go through with you, saying, Tom, I need a senior software engineer. What are the questions that you will ask me to ensure that you can go and get the right candidates?
Very good question. When you're talking with a CEO or a CTO or someone looking to hire tech within their team, it's really important to first identify who they currently have and what the key skill sets are. I think that's the first kind of question is, like, you know, what tech skills do they need and why? You know, what are they going to be doing on a daily basis? I think it then comes down to the current team that they have, the diversity, the quality that they have, and the experience, and where this potential new hire would fit within that team. I think it's very important that startups, you know, hire different people from different backgrounds, because it creates a completely different culture. I think a lot of startups, when they're creating a job description, that they're creating the perfect candidate. And in reality, perfect candidates don't come up very often. So there needs to be some flexibility about areas that can adjust. And then it's going out to the market, networking, talking to people that have those core skill sets. Typically, they need to have a computer science background, you know, master's level Python programming experience. And then it's about people that are ambitious and looking to grow in their career and are ready for the challenge of a startup, because it's not easy and there are challenges. But I think CEOs, when they're looking to hire, those are the main things. They want core skill sets that are relevant to the products that they're designing. They want someone that's passionate about the industry that they're joining or potential job that they'll be doing. And then someone that fits the culture of what the CEO or what the executives within that company are looking to create.
Yeah, interesting. It's quite funny because yesterday I was speaking to one of the founders of a startup company, and he was mentioning that he was recruiting, and he said, like, yeah, we've got our own HR in-house now to really look for relevant candidates. If you look at that process of startup companies either doing things in-house or outsourcing people like yourself, what are the benefits that you think you as a company that is specialized in this will benefit a company, a startup?
I think the benefit from what I've experienced is startups that are growing quite quickly, HR isn't necessarily a function that's a priority to begin with. You know, they need to get the product designed or the software developed, so they need to hire tech people to begin with. HR becomes a priority once you get towards maybe 20, 30 people headcount. I think the benefit of outsourcing to an agency like my, you know, Vivid Technology or a specialized recruiter is that we can go out to the whole market. Whereas sometimes if you're working in a startup in Oxford, the CEO might be in contact with other CEOs within the area. And, you know, it's kind of a hands-off agreement between companies that you don't approach each other's employees. So that it kind of gives companies a chance to see the top talent available to them without having to have those difficult conversations themselves.
I think that's really interesting. Thane, have you ever been headhunted before? Have you ever got that message on LinkedIn where somebody's like, hey, I see you know these things?
I'm sure you have.
Yeah, to be fair, like, yeah, it does happen. But I think this is a good point, because I was about to ask Tom about that as well, because it can sometimes be annoying, you know, sometimes.
You're getting a lot of messages.
No, but it's an interesting point, because I can see in the industry, it could be annoying, because it might well be that someone's coming in from a different background, or they haven't really looked at your LinkedIn profile properly and just go out and say, hey, oh, I see you work in immunology. You'd be interested in becoming a scientist. Well, people should be knowing that now I'm not working in that space anymore.
Yeah.
And I can imagine that it can sometimes be a little bit annoying for people to be approached by headhunters and recruiters. How do you deal with that, Tom? Because it happens, right? It's part of your job.
So, yeah, of course. It's a really good point, because recruitment is changing. Recruiters are in a position where we have the tools we need to be as successful as we want to be. Yeah. But you still have to go about it in the right way. You can't just rely on sending out 200 emails a week, not really reading someone's LinkedIn profile and then expecting them to reply to you in a really nice, polite and personal manner, because you haven't spent the time doing your research. So you have to be personal. You have to be specific about why you're contacting someone. You know, people like you, Thane, you don't have the time to reply to recruiters that are sending the same generic message every time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I also think it's also of being value. I think that's, if you get a message and it says like, you can see straight through it. You can see straight through it that they've sent it to like 100 other people. And I think that's probably the annoying bit. But if they can pick out your right skills, and I think David, you can elaborate a little bit on this, because you've seen that by doing a lot of the interviews with people in the CAP community, yeah, where skill sets comes around and people are talking about a lack of a certain skill. And for a recruiter to really highlight that and say, hey, your skill is so valuable for this industry or this company we were speaking to, that comes with a completely different vibe, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think what's important about tailoring those messages and identifying the skills is that it then creates interest and opportunity. And a lot of startups, they'll have a job description of who they want to hire. And sometimes they'll hire someone that's not even relevant to the job description. They just have a specific skill set that they know they might need in the future. And networking is key, to be honest. I mean, Thane and David, I reached out to you guys after I listened to your podcast, but it's about building relationships and building trust.
Absolutely.
The most important thing about recruitment is being personal and, yeah.
I wanted to ask as well, the flip side of this is, how can people advertise themselves? How do they get into the industry? How do they show off their skills that a recruiter can pick up on it and kind of and nab the right person for the job, shall we say?
Identify the industry or the key companies within that field. Say, for example, AI drug discovery. In the UK, you've got 100 companies that are doing that. You know, that's quite a small number of companies. And start to identify, you know, how big those companies are, where they might be growing, and what kind of people they currently have within their company, what skill sets they have. And you'll start to feel, you know, if that's well, you know, if that's a good fit for what you've been doing. Then you have the platforms of LinkedIn and various different ways in which you can start to become known or seen. I think visibility and credibility on LinkedIn is huge. You know, that's part of my job, is building my network. And, you know, if I was a candidate looking for a job, I'd reach out to a recruiter who's an expert, but I'd also look at doing that myself, you know, building my own personal brand on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I'll try not to bang on about LinkedIn too much because, you know, I don't work for them, but
I'd like to stop you there, Tom, because especially now with the whole COVID situation, you talked about networking and going out, that's not possible. So I think it is important to focus a little bit on LinkedIn and how can you make yourself visible? Because at the moment, it looks like it's the only social platform out there that allows you to do so.
Exactly. Yeah. So we can't attend conferences. We can't meet clients. We can't meet candidates at the moment. So LinkedIn is a really powerful tool for networking. I think it's important that when you network, you're conscious of what you're trying to achieve. It's very easy to look at it in a way of you know, what can I get out of this? And that's the wrong way to network. You need to add value and you need to give before you can ask. So I think it's important to think about the content that you're sharing. Does that add value to the network that you're trying to build? Are you helping people? And I think LinkedIn is very much focused on engagement. And if you're sharing content that is not particularly engaging, or you're just posting articles that are written by someone else, it only gets you so far. But you have to use it in the correct way, which is commenting, connecting with people, and making suggestions about what they could do, or adding value to the stuff that they're sharing.
And I think it's about being creative, especially now, because and this is something I realized when I finished my PhD, is because at the beginning, you think like, okay, I've got a PhD, every company wants me, or I've got a certain degree, whether it's an engineering degree or a data science degree, I'm there. I have been to like a great university, I've got my degree. But a lot of people realize that, and I think what I realized over the years is that it's not just your degree, it's about being creative. And it's also about, as you mentioned, Tom, about building a network, linking up with the right people, but also getting your ears out around how certain jobs look like, what skill sets you might need. And I think that is something when the person that you talked about saying like recruiters have gone lazy, I also think sometimes the people that are looking for jobs also have become a little bit lazy in the sense of, oh yeah, I've got my degree, I can go out and I can get a job within 6 months to a year. That's not the case, yeah. Right?
No, and that's exactly right. I'll give you a prime example of a company that we recruit for, who they're a small company, right? But they're setting their expectations of, you know, we want to be the next Google, we want to be the next Apple, right?
So aim high, yeah.
aim high, which is
why good, not?
But also that's what they're aiming for. And so they need to hire people that think outside the box, that are different, that are creative.
No, I think an also important thing, I think we covered a couple of really good points, but there's so much more to this whole topic and discussion. And I just really want to touch upon expectations versus reality for a job, Tom. I think this is probably a tricky one because you get a job description, you identify yourself as a perfect candidate, you go for the call, you get a meeting, you get an offer, you start in, and then especially in a startup, you realize, oh wow, there are loads of aspects of this role that I was not aware of. I didn't expect that.
Fane and I are both, I think, experienced working for startups, and it is a case of wearing many hats, and you've you know, it's always more than what the job description says, you know. So how do you help the person you recruit? I guess I know you're working for the company to hire someone, but how do you help the person you find, you know, manage their expectations going forward?
Okay, a couple of points that are, I believe, are really important here. So expectations regarding salary, it's difficult. I think when you're joining a startup or you're early in your career, it's very easy to fall into the trap of, oh, how much am I going to get paid? What am I worth? In reality, based on what we previously talked about, companies have a choice now. They can hire whoever they like, really. So if you set your expectations too high, you're going to set yourself up to fail. I think it's important to really consider about the company you're joining, you know, what their values are, what their vision is. Does that align to what you want to do? I also think it's important that early on in your career, people don't stay at companies like they did 10, 20 years ago. You know, you can move. If you join a startup, you're there for 2 years. If it's not fitting your career ambitions or there's no alignment, then you can find another job. So don't feel that you have to really find the perfect opportunity straight away, because, you know, the reality is that's very unlikely.
It's funny that you're saying that, because someone told me as well, like, you will kiss a lot of ugly frogs before you find a princess.
It's so true. And also, you know, a lot of the companies that I recruit for, they like to hire people that have already got a couple of years office experience or lab experience, because they don't then have to train them about the office environment or how to work remotely from home. The money question, what am I worth? It's fair, it's valid. And certainly if you've got a good recruiter or you've done your research, you should know what your value is.
Yeah, I was just saying, have you got any examples now? That what are you worth question is something that scientists ask themselves. And I think consistently we undervalue ourselves an awful lot. And obviously there's other factors such as location, but I mean, let's take your area of expertise, the Oxford, Cambridge area, as an example. So what can a typical maybe software engineer expect if they're joining an AI kind of discovery type company?
And I just wanted to add, especially when you're coming straight out of academia, where you're quite familiar on what the pay grade is or how low, whether it's a scientist or whether it's a software engineer or a data scientist.
Yeah, and it's hard because a lot of people want to transition from academia to industry.
Yeah.
And it's hard to quantify how much, you know, 10 years research experience converts to being a software engineer within industry. So having that expectation to begin with, that if I move from academia to industry, I'm going to get a massive pay rise, it's not the best way to look at it. So I think salaries in Oxford, Cambridge, London, I think if you're a junior software engineer, anything around the 30-35K mark is a good base salary. Again, I'd say don't focus on that. Focus on the company you're joining and how you can grow, you know, who the hiring manager is. Are there any mentors in that company that you can gain experience from?
Yeah.
I think if you're then looking at, you know, once you've got a couple of years industry experience in a small company or a bigger firm, and you then want to make a move to one of these early startups in AI drug discovery, you're probably looking around 40 to 45K. And then... beyond that, once you've got 5 years experience, the salary level does go up quite quickly from, you know, 5 to 10 years. Within this industry, AI data engineers are earning close to 3 figures now, base salary. Obviously, the industry is only going in one direction and growth is anticipated for a number of years. So that's going to increase. But if you're looking to get into this industry now, don't set your expectations too high. I think if you think outside the box and you create a really good impression, they'll pay you what you're worth. That's my advice. Yeah.
Tom, you mentioned 3 figures. I haven't heard about that yet. I've heard about 6-figure salary. Is that the same?
Yeah, no, that's probably okay. What I meant. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I've got one question to wrap us up. What top 3 tips would you give to somebody now looking for work in this sector, coming into the new year in COVID times, as we've started calling it?
In the new year in COVID times, I'd say number one is do your research. Know the industry that you'd like to work in. Identify a recruiter or network your way to the right people. What's really important, number two, I'd say, is tailoring your CV. The amount of CVs that I see that have no relevance to the job that I've posted or the position that they've applied for, you know, bear in mind, if a hiring manager only has 10 minutes to review a CV, and if he or she can't see within that 10 minutes that you match the job description, then you're never going to get anywhere. So every application or every recruiter you talk to, you should read the job description. You should then amend your CV after you've read it and really make it stand out. I mean, if they want Python and they want AWS experience, make sure that's the first line of your CV. Because they don't have the time to read through every bit of experience that you have. Do your research, network, tailor your CV. And I think most importantly, I mentioned it earlier on, is if you're fresh out of uni and you're looking for your first job, don't be too picky. It's okay to change jobs. It's okay to work somewhere for a year, 2 years. It's all experience. And it will all get you where you need to go. But I think at the moment, during these challenging times, you will find the right opportunity eventually, but maybe it may mean joining somewhere for a couple of years that you don't want to be.
Start with an ugly frog.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to kiss a few before you get to where you want to go. But yeah, do your research, network, and tailor your CV. Those are my key tips, if you like.
I think that's very good advice and great advice to end this episode of Cab Talk on. Tom, thank you so much for coming on. We've been itching to get you on for ages, so it's good that we finally got it done, I think, at a good time of the year.
No worries.
And if you were interested in a job in the digital health space or in the computer-aided biology space in general, Vivid Technology, obviously, probably your first port of call now that you know how professional Tom is. But also, we do advertise jobs on our newsletter, the Computer-Aided Biology newsletter. So if you are interested, please take a look. And if you're a Computer-Aided Biology member, remember, it is free to join the community. You can advertise a job with us. Just get in touch at revolutionaries@computeratedbiology.com. So please tune in next time.
Hey, guys. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks. Cheers, guys.
Thanks a million.